Introduction to Felix Holt, the Radical. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Felix Holt, the Radical, by George Eliot. Introduction. 35 years ago, the glory had not yet departed from the old coach roads. The great roadside inns were still brilliant with well-polished tankards, the smiling glances of pretty barmaids, and the repartees of jocose ostlers. The mail still announced itself by the merry notes of the horn. The hedge-cutter or the rick-thatcher might still know the exact hour by the unfailing yet otherwise meteoric apparition of the pea-green tally-ho or the yellow independent. And elderly gentlemen in pony chaises, quartering nervously to make way for the rolling, swinging swiftness, had not ceased to remark that times were finally changed, since they used to see the pack-horses and hear the tinkling of their bells on their very highway. In those days there were pocket boroughs, a Birmingham unrepresented in Parliament and compelled to make strong representations out of it, unrepealed corn laws, 3 and 6 penny letters, a brawny and many-breeding pauperism, and other departed evils. But there were some pleasant things, too, which have also departed. "Non omnia grandior itis quae fugi armis habet," says the wise goddess. You have not the best of it in all things, O youngsters. The elderly man has his enviable memories, and not the least of them is the memory of a long journey in mid-spring or autumn on the outside of a stagecoach. Posterity may be shot like a bullet through a tube, by atmospheric pressure from Winchester to Newcastle. That is a fine result to have among our hopes. But the slow old-fashioned way of getting from one end of our country to the other is the better thing to have in the memory. The tube journey can never lend much to picture and narrative. It is as barren as an exclamatory, "Oh!" Where is the happy outside passenger seated on the box from the dawn to the gloaming, gathered enough stories of English life, enough of English labours in town and country, enough aspects of earth and sky, to make episodes for a modern odyssey? Suppose only that his journey took him through the central plain, watered at one extremity by the Avon, at the other by the Trent, as the morning silvered the meadows with their long lines of bushy willows marking the watercourses, or burnished the golden corn-ricks clustered near the long roofs of some midland homestead. He saw the full uddered cows driven from their pasture to the early milking. Perhaps it was the shepherd, head servant of the farm, who drove them, his sheep-dog following with a heedless unofficial air of a beadle in undress. The shepherd, with a slow and slouching walk, timed by the walk of grazing beasts, moved aside as if unwillingly, throwing out a monosyllabic hint to his cattle. His glance, accustomed to rest on things very near the earth, seemed to lift itself with difficulty to the coachman. Mail or stagecoach for him belonged to that mysterious distant system of things called government, which, whatever it might be, was no business of his, any more than the most outlying nebula or the coal-sacks of the southern hemisphere. His solar system was the parish, the master's temper, and the casualties of lambing time were his region of storms. He cut his bread and bacon with his pocket-knife, and felt no bitterness except in the matter of pauper labourers, and the bad luck that sent contrarious seasons and the sheep-rot. He and his cows were soon left behind, and the homestead too, with its pond overhung by elder-trees, its untidy kitchen-garden and cone-shaped yew-tree arbour. But everywhere the bushy hedgerows wasted the land with their straggling beauty, shrouded the grassy borders of the pastures with catkined hazels, and tossed their long blackberry branches on the cornfields. Perhaps they were white with may, or starred with pale pink dog-roses. Perhaps the urchins were already nutting amongst them, or gathering the plenteous crabs. It was worth the journey only to see those hedgerows, the liberal homes of unmarketable beauty, of the purple-blossomed ruby-berried nightshade, of the wild convolvulus climbing and spreading in tendrilled strength, till it made a great curtain of pale green hearts and white trumpets, of the many-tubed honeysuckle, which, in its most delicate fragrance, hid a charm more subtle and penetrating than beauty. Even if it were winter, the hedgerows showed their coral, the scarlet haws, the deep crimson
Sample complete. Ready to continue?